You're listening to House of Cards on the House of Cards Radio Network. Check us out at houseofcardsradio.com.
You know what cheers me up?
What?
Rolled up aces over kings.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls.
The House of Cards. Today, the game is different. With author and professional poker player Ashley Adams.
Okay, you have some skin.
Hi, listeners. Welcome to House of Cards. I'm Ashley Adams, your host for the hour. We've got a great show, a very, very interesting guy, a guy who used to be a grinder for many, many years, was just a grinding poker player, making his living professionally playing poker, ventured into writing and coaching. And I was fortunate enough to get a copy of his new book called A Rubber Band Story, which is a compilation of many of the stories he's written for poker magazines and on his blog. We're going to be talking to him about that and about the profession of poker coaching, because now he is a high-level poker coach for professional poker players. And then I take a lot of poker trips, not as many as I like, but I do take a lot. And I found myself driving from Phoenix up into Las Vegas to visit some friends. And on the way, I stopped at a place that doesn't fit the mold of the typical poker emporium that most of us have played at. It's not a Foxwoods, it's not a Commerce, it's not a Venetian, but it is a fun and different place to stop. It's a place called Bucky's Casino. So I decided to invite on as a guest Akhil Patel, who is the table games manager. We're going to be talking to him. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Great moments in history. In 481 BC, the defeat of the Spartans at the Battle of Thermopylae.
As long as Xerxes doesn't find the secret path to the hot gates.
Where is it, boy?
Xerxes has found the secret goat path to the hot gates.
Ah, shit!
In June 2008, House of Cards began podcasting. Go to houseofcardsradio.com and click on the podcast button for all recent show downloads.
Hi, listeners. This is Ashley Adams. I just wanted to mention something, that if any of you have any poker questions that you would like to ask, we are always interested in your questions and comments about the show, about the guests, strategy questions. They could be practical questions about where and how to find the game. Send your questions to info@houseofcardsradio.com. And you can also get our tweets on Twitter at www.twitter.com/HOC Radio. We're very interested in them. And of course, if they're particularly interesting, we'll put them on the air and answer them here in our segment of mailbag. Info@houseofcardsradio.com and www.twitter.com/HOC Radio. Info@houseofcardsradio.com and www.twitter.com/HOC Radio.
Hey, you serious about poker? Then Winning 7-Card Stud by Ashley Adams is a must-have for stud players of all levels. In Winning 7-Card Stud, the World Series of Poker veteran takes you through a series of lessons and strategies designed to make you a better player in all phases of your game. The techniques of betting, what cards to play, how to read the other players, the art of bluffing, you'll learn to master them all. Winning 7-Card Stud by professional poker player Ashley Adams. Available at Amazon.com.
You're listening to House of Cards on the House of Cards Radio Network. Check us out at houseofcardsradio.com.
What?
face. Ma 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 pa 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 poker face.
Guys,
pa poker face.
Guys,
ma 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 ma.
Look, I really think it's time for us to do something. This is all getting way out of hand. What do you mean? The song is sweet.
Theater 5 presents A House of Cards.
But are we cool?
Not really.
Welcome back, listeners. We are here with poker pro, poker coach, poker writer extraordinaire, Tommy Angelo, who's just come out with a book. I think it's just come out. I just saw it for the first time. It's a compilation of stories he's written, fiction and nonfiction, called A Rubber Band Story and Other Poker Tales. Tommy, are you there?
I'm here. How you doing, Ashley?
I am doing great. I had a ball reading this book and all the stories in it, and I want to just start by having you introduce yourself to our readers. I know about you because I read your book, but tell our listeners who you are and how you came to write all these interesting, funny stories.
Well, I played poker for a living for about 15 years, and along the way, I read a lot of poker magazines, and I've always wanted to be a writer. I've worked on writing, so I started submitting poker articles to magazines, and that went really well. And so I was basically a columnist for about 10 years or so before I wrote my first book, Elements of Poker, which was really more about hardcore poker stuff. But a lot of the writing has done has been much more lighter, much more fun. Just, you know, I see something really hilarious happen at the table, and I'll write it down, and I go home and make a story out of it. So over the years, I've collected a lot of stories, short ones, longer ones, and it just seemed like a good time to put them in the, you know, put them all together in one volume.
Well, we're going to get to some of those stories and some of the crazy ideas and concepts that you've created in a second. But I'm just curious, what were some of the magazines that you wrote for when you first started writing?
I first started writing for Poker Digest, and this was in 98. June Field was a publisher. There were only two magazines there then, Card Player and Poker Digest. And I started reading some articles by John Vorhas, and he was the first poker writer I ever read who was actually having fun with his writing. And I was like, you know, I can do that. And I take my writing very seriously. I mean, I do really think of myself as a writer just as much as a poker player. So that's how it started. And then Poker Digest folded, and then I wrote for Poker Pages, which was like a really big online magazine. I wrote for them for a few years, and then I wrote for Bluff Magazine when they came out because I had a good relationship with the people there. And then since my book came out, Elements of Poker, 2007, since then I started a blog. And so now when I think I have a really good story to tell, I just put it on my blog.
And for our listeners, what is your blog? How do they get to it?
It's TommyAngelo.com, which is my website, /blog.
Okay, we're going to put that on our site, TommyAngelo.com/blog, so people can check right in. I want to go through right away. You write a lot of stories that are set in poker rooms. You introduce a character. I don't know if he's real or a compilation of different people or if he's totally fictionalized. This guy, Alex, is he a real guy?
He's real.
He is a real.
He's actually real, yeah.
Okay, and he's
my best friend.
Ah, okay. Yep. Well, that's let me ask you a couple of things, some hypotheticals. You wrote about, you asked the reader if they would take a bet where you'd always have the worst hand. And would you take it if you could get anything you wanted if you were to win, I think, over some long series of hands, and you'd have to kill yourself or be killed if you lost. I'm wondering if you always were to have, I guess, what was the philosophy behind even posing that question? It's who would ever take that bet? Why would anybody ever take that bet?
Oh, yeah. Well, the idea came to me when I was sitting there. I had 7 deuce offsuit and a big blind playing the limit. As a typical type of hand where, you know, one guy raised and a few guys called, but the guy who raised I knew was very, very loose. And, you know, if I re-raise, he's going to fold most of the time. And the other three guys who called are going to fold, or they would have re-raised. And so it's really a great bluffing opportunity. But I didn't bluff because I had 7 deuce offsuit. The cards kind of got in my way. And I wondered, you know, if I never looked at my card, if I always had the absolute worst hand on every street of every hand, which meant the only way I could win was by bluffing perfectly or well, you know, could I win? Would I be able to actually have a profit. Now, the conditions are that the opponents have to somehow never know that I always have the worst hand.
Right.
I mean, it's not realistic, but it really, it all came from just the idea of if I were never distracted by having bad cards and then looking down 8-3 offsuit, and then there's something goes on in your head that says, okay, this hand's over. Well, it's not over. You know, there's so many opportunities to make money with bad hands, and it's really where it came from, just that idea.
I see. Well, I'm wondering if you would take that bet at odds. I mean, for example, if you were to win that bet, you would have anything your heart ever desired, $1 billion, an island,
right.
You know, whatever,
uh-huh.
Sex with the most beautiful woman in the world every night if you wanted, whatever,
right.
Or the most beautiful
right.
guy for that matter. But what you lose is your life. So it seems like that's not really a fair bet because that's an even bet. You yeah. lose, you get everything. But what if it was at odds? If you would lose a finger, would you take that bet for losing a finger versus having it, or losing an arm or losing an eye?
Right.
And
well,
I'm wondering. Yes, go ahead.
I wouldn't take the bet. I wouldn't take the bet anyway because I'm a very, very conservative gambler. I'm not going to risk an eye over anything that I could lose. So, but I get what you're saying. If it were just a matter of do I think I was good enough to, you know, win that bet, laying odds? I don't think so. I think it is actually about an even money bet. I think it would be really, really hard to make, you know, to actually make a profit, say, over years without ever having a good hand. But I think it could conceivably be done.
I don't know, because it's hard enough making a profit, even getting a random amount of hands, let alone the worst hand every time. And
I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I hit a button here. That's kind of the whole point, though. That really is the whole point of the story, is that if we had to focus only on the bluffing situations and nothing else, thereby making us great, great bluffers, you know, would that really be enough? And I agree with you. It's probably not realistically doable. I mean, but it is something interesting to think about, though.
Yes, and, you know, it's funny. If you're a tight player like I am, like you are, you have a lot of time in between folds when you're just tired of, you know, you read the poker writers that say, oh, you should pay attention to everybody else in the hand constantly because you can always pay. Yeah, I suppose theoretically, but who can do that? So you have all this time when, at least for me, I'm daydreaming.
Uh-huh.
And I come up right. with different hypothetical situations that, of course, could never really happen. But this is one. And I'm wondering where you would come down. Let's say you could have a poker player's superpower. You could choose to either have the power of complete foresight, where you would know the flop, the turn, and the river, every uh-huh. hand, or you could have the superpower of always knowing constantly what your opponent's down cards were. Which would you prefer? You could only have one superpower. Which would you prefer?
Yeah.
And why?
Just knowing. Oh, wow. Oh, I think I would want to know. I would like to give this some more thought. It's a neat question. What I like about this question is that they're both good things. instead of it always being bad things. I think I would want to know what they had. I think I would make more money from that than knowing what cards are coming. And maybe this goes right back to the bluffing thing because, man, oh, man, just think that, you know, most of the time, you know, people hit the flop one-third of the time or whatever, and that means that I'd be able to take those punts. I don't know. That is a fascinating question. But my hunch, my first reaction would be I would want to know what they had.
See, now that's interesting you would say that. Yeah. Because what I've found is the more experienced and professionals that I've talked to and posed that question, and I often ask it at the table, if only to try to lighten up the mood, because these days, I don't know what you're finding out. You're on the West Coast, right?
Yeah.
You're up in the San Francisco, the Bay Area?
Correct.
Well, I'll tell you, the poker games out here, the no-limit hold'em games. Now, you're a limit player, so maybe it's different. But
I play no limit. No, I've been playing nothing but no limit for years, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, your stories, occasionally you wrote that you're predominantly a limit player, but that's obviously dated because your stories go back a ways. But in any event,
correct.
In the no-limit games out here have gotten a lot tougher, especially 2-5 and 5-10. People have become so damn serious at the table. I mean, not that they weren't, but more serious people that are there grinding it out, like you. I mean, they're grinders like me. They go there to make money. They're not there to have fun. And so I try to lighten things up, and so I would ask this question. And what I found is that the answers that the more serious, successful players give me is a variation of, well, you know, I'm pretty good at figuring out what other people have anyway, and I have absolutely no way of knowing what cards are coming except statistical. So if I had to have one or the other, I choose the one that I have the least ability to know anything about, which is the flop, the turn, and the river. So that's kind of what, where I was.
Well, see, I never hit anything anyway, so I need to know when I can steal. It doesn't do me any good to know what card's coming if it misses my hand, you know, so.
Then I had another question for you, because you have a great imagination, and you clearly have a life, even though you wrote in your introduction or your afterwards that you're obsessed with poker. You clearly have a mind and a life away from the table, imagination away from the table. And I'm wondering what it would take to get you to say, I'm never playing any more poker again. How much would it be? If somebody said, you know what, I'll pay you. You have a story about this a little bit. I'll pay you $100 an hour to do something mindless, but you have to agree not to play poker. Would you do that? If they said, well, I'm going to give you $10 million, but you can never play poker again, would you do that? What's your price?
Yeah. Oh, well, if I'm allowed to do anything else I would can with the time, this isn't a fair question to me, because I basically don't play already. I mean, I'm playing very, very little these days. Because what, you know, I've been doing coaching and writing, and I really can't do it all. And so I've sort of moved away from playing. I'm not grinding anymore. When I play, it's, you know, I feel somewhat recreational. But I can still pretend. I can go back. And let's say I was right in the heart of it all and playing every day and grinding away. I would put the number on, you know, I haven't really been addicted to poker in a long time. So I would just put it on, you know, what I think I would need to live comfortably on for many, many years. And that would be probably about $3 million.
Okay.
I would negotiate for whatever I could get, basically.
That would be me, too.
I would do it for $3 million, and right now, today, I would probably do it for $1
million. Okay, well, because you have another way of making money now. You write, and do you do anything else other than coaching and writing about poker?
No.
That's it?
Yeah.
So just for people that are thinking, hey, you know, maybe I'll get out of this playing, this grinding job and do something else, what can you make coaching, and how do you make money coaching?
My price for coaching at my website is I coach almost exclusively professionals now for the last 20 or 30 clients, and it's a 3-day program, and it costs $10,000, and it comes with a fair amount of follow up. So my coaching program has evolved into a fairly significant commitment on both parties, and so I make good money at the coaching.
Why would somebody hire you as a coach?
They hire me as a coach to get a comprehensive look at their entire poker life. And a lot of times people hire me as a coach because they've read my material and they get where I'm coming from, and they want to hear my best efforts at putting my ideas toward their specific situation, their life, you know, their bankroll, their needs, their weaknesses, their strengths, all of that. And a lot of the work I do with guys is related to tilt or, you know, stability, mental control, focus, discipline. So I've gotten a really good reputation in that area because I've worked with some fairly big name guys. And so because of that, through word of mouth, other, you know, fairly substantially, you know, really good players, some good pros hire me.
And what's your approach? I mean, when let's say I'm Joe Rubicon out of Foxwoods, and I'm a pretty damn good player. I have some holes in my game and some leaks, and I'm looking to shape it up, and I've read some good things about you, but I don't really know what to do. Mm-hmm. So I go to your website, I send you an email, and I say, so I may be willing to pony up the $10,000, but I want to know a bit more about what you do. What are you going to do with me?
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, what we would do is we have like a consultation on the phone, because I need to be convinced that the person's going to get value before I take your client on. And so we have they fill out a questionnaire that tells me a lot about them, and that generates a lot of questions for me. So our first consultation, which is free, I ask a lot of questions. And then I go through, I tell them there's like four main branches to my program. I'm not going to go through all this now. But I have a very matter of sort of a organized way of explaining to them that this is one area I deliver value. This is another area. Like, for example, I teach live poker coaching is one part of what I do. So you got these internet guys that want to play live. They want to play the World Series, the big tournaments. I have an entire curriculum. We play together in the same game for mutual observation, and they observe me. I observe them. So the live coaching is one aspect of it. And very little of the work I do anymore is about betting strategy. It's almost entirely about non-betting topics.
The mega game?
Yeah, all of that. Yeah, like, you know, bankroll, you know, sleeping. You know, let's say a guy's like, okay, I can't get to sleep when I got done playing poker because my mind's racing all the time, but I got to get up next day and play day two of the tournament. That's the type of thing I help guys with. It's like all over the place. Excuse me.
Interesting. So you must have met a lot of people in the poker world. Can you tell us a story about the strangest person you've met, or a strange, interesting person that you don't have to give us their name, but I'm just curious about the characters that may have inspired some of your stories?
Oh, well, you're talking about just in general, not through coaching necessarily.
No, not through coaching.
There's one story I actually didn't put in the book, was from back when I played in Ohio, but there was a night where this guy was so upset. He was this older guy, and his veins would just be popping out. He went, and this was a home game, like a really seedy, slimy type, I shouldn't say that, but, you know, under the radar, you know, seamy underbelly of poker home game, right? And so this guy goes, there was drugs and guns and everything. So this guy, he goes into the bathroom. He's in, unbelievably tilted, right? Just insane. And he shoots off his gun. Like he says, I'm going to the bathroom to kill myself, you know, MFers. And he shoots off his gun, and nobody goes in to check on him. and he comes out like five. He comes out 3 minutes later, and he's madder than he was when he went in, because nobody even cared if he killed himself in there. So that was pretty good.
That's very good. And what do you do for an encore after you've done that? And nobody's come to your rescue.
Yeah, I know. That's the ultimate boy who cried wolf there.
That's right. Yep. I'm wondering if you would say that there is a lot of mental illness among professional poker players, serious poker players, or is it really the aberration? Because when you read your stories, you think, oh, these guys must be nuts. Is it really the aberration, or is it really a lot of obsessive compulsive behavior among serious poker players?
Totally obsessive compulsive. I mean, the way I look at it is you have to be obsessive compulsive at some point to get really, really, really good at anything, whether it's piano, you know, or poker. And the sort of the trap or the it's like the problem that a lot of poker players get to is you go through this super compulsive section period of life. You know, and I don't mind calling it addictive. I use the word addictive, but not in a negative way. It's just that's a behavior pattern. And then all of a sudden you get really good and you're making good money and you can do all this. And then all of a sudden you need to pull back and get some balance and discipline in your life, or else you just go right off the cliff. So it's really a balancing act. And it's very common for somebody to go way out of bounds, you know, too far into poker, let's say, to where that's the only thing they ever do. But you almost have to do that at some point, I think, to get really, really good. And then the trick is, can you bring it back at the balance?
Right. Well, I got to say, Tommy, I really enjoyed your book, A Rubber Band Story. We've been talking to Tommy Angelo, who is a poker coach and a poker writer and now a sometimes poker player. Hope you come back when you have your next book out. And we've enjoyed this. Thanks very much. Folks can catch him on his website. TommyAngelo.com/blog if you want to read his latest writings. We'll have that up on our site. Thanks for joining us, Tommy. We'll be back after a quick break.
You're listening to House of Cards on the House of Cards Radio Network. Check us out at houseofcardsradio.com. Great moments in history. In 1591, Sir Walter Raleigh was imprisoned in the Tower of London for insulting Queen Elizabeth I.
I too can command the wind, sir! I have a hurricane in me that will strip Spain bare if you dare to try me!
Well, I'd love to stay and chat, but you're a total bitch.
In June 2008, House of Cards began podcasting. Go to houseofcardsradio.com and click on the podcast button for all recent show downloads.
Hi, listeners. This is Ashley Adams. I just wanted to mention something, that if any of you have any poker questions that you would like to ask, we are always interested in your questions and comments about the show, about the guests, strategy questions. They could be practical questions about where and how to find the game. Send your questions to info@houseofcardsradio.com. And you can also get our tweets on Twitter at www.twitter.com/HOC Radio. We're very interested in them. And of course, if they're particularly interesting, we'll put them on the air and answer them here in our segment of mailbag. Info@houseofcardsradio.com and www.twitter.com/HOC Radio. Info@houseofcardsradio.com and www.twitter.com/HOC Radio.
Hey, you serious about poker? Then winning 7-card stud by Ashley Adams is a must-have for stud players of all levels. In winning 7-card stud, the World Series of Poker Veteran takes you through a series of lessons and strategies designed to make you a better player in all phases of your game. The techniques of betting, what cards to play, how to read the other players, the art of bluffing, you'll learn to master them all. Winning 7-card stud by professional poker player Ashley Adams. Available at Amazon.com.
Hey, this is Dave from House of Cards with your House of Cards gaming report for the week of July 11, 2011. Well, more bad news for the once giant online gaming entity known as Full Tilt. Last week, both French and British officials suspended Full Tilt's gaming license, preventing it from operating in those countries. Central to their rulings were the downtimes experienced by players and the players' inability to access their accounts. As of this moment, hearings have not yet been scheduled to reconsider these decisions. At press time, Full Tilt and Absolute Poker have not yet refunded money owed to American players, and the gaming boards of these two countries want to make certain that European player accounts are secure. It's official. Within 3 months, residents of Washington, D.C. will be able to play poker online. The District of Columbia will be the first municipal government to offer online gambling within its limits. However, there's a catch. Although the dollar amount has not been finalized, gamblers in D.C. will likely be barred from depositing more than $250 per week in their online accounts. Critics of this measure feel that such low stakes will make D.C.'s online poker rooms unattractive to poker pros and high-stakes gamblers. The online gaming, run by the D.C. Lottery, is expected to generate $13 million for the district in over a 4-year period. A new state law in Nevada has made it easier for companies to acquire casinos in the state. Under the new law, companies and individuals are no longer required to run a gaming company in Nevada or have a purchase agreement to acquire a casino in the state to file for a license. Removing this requirement is expected to boost investment in the state's struggling gaming industry. Have any news or tips regarding casinos, gaming, or legislation? Send us an email at newsroom@houseofcardsradio.com. Now, back to more House of Cards.
Some houses are born bad.
You're listening to the House of Cards.
I never dreamed that any mere physical experience could be so stimulating.
Welcome back, listeners. We have, to me, a very interesting guest from an atypical poker room whom we're going to be talking to. His name is Akhil Patel. He's the table games manager for Bucky's Casino. Now, you may not have heard of Bucky's. I know we've had the poker room manager for the Bellagio, for Foxwoods, for the Venetian, for the Commerce. Bucky's is not one of those rooms. But we're going to hear about it because I think our listeners, smart, interested, broad-minded poker players that you are, should know about rooms from every end of the poker spectrum. So, with that introduction, Akhil, are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you?
I am well. And, you know, I just want our listeners to know how it is that we met. I was driving from Las Vegas up to Phoenix and then back down again. I was visiting friends in Las Vegas and a great poker writer that I'm friends with there, and then I was in Phoenix, and I figured I would kind of take a winding way and found myself driving by Bucky's Casino. So tell us about Bucky's. Where is it?
Bucky's is in Prescott, Arizona. It's very, very mild climate all year long. And it's about 90 miles north of Phoenix and 90 miles south of Flagstaff. It's in a small, we're a small native Indian casino that really stresses on customer service and customer experience.
So, okay, let's talk about customer service and customer experience. Why would somebody go to Bucky's Poker Room? What do you have to offer that other poker rooms and other places don't have?
I think right off the bat is the service and the appreciation shown by a front line team.
Well, how do they show their appreciation? What do they do?
Didn't mean to run over you.
No, that's all right. Go ahead.
With our market, because we're in such a niche situation, we have to remember everybody by name. We have to know exactly what they want and anticipate their needs prior to them getting there, so we can take care of any needs they want.
Well, like what do you mean? What kind of needs would they mean? You don't have a lot of competition there in Prescott, do you?
Well, the competition is how you look at it. I look at competition as any place that takes a discretionary dollar, whether it's a movie theater or a restaurant. I think in today's economy, we are competing with everybody.
I see. You're competing for their discretionary dollar. Why would somebody decide to come to Bucky's? Do you have really good promotions, giveaways? Is your rake really low? What's it like?
We constantly have promotions. We are constantly doing new things and changing them up. We have something coming online pretty soon, which is like a game within itself. Unfortunately, I can't talk about it right now. It's two games rolled into one for a poker promo.
All right. And, what do you have going on now in your poker room that you can talk about?
Right now, we have every day we have Aces Cracked and Kings Conquered from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. We alternate every hour as to what the hand is. That makes and they get paid $50 for every, if they lose with a pair of pocket aces or pocket kings.
I see. Is this a house-funded promotion, or does this come out of the rake or a jackpot pool?
This comes out of the jackpot rake.
I see. How does that work? What is the rake and what's the jackpot take out?
The rake, we have a max rake of $5, which is two at 10, two at 30, and one at 60. And the jackpot rake is $1 a hand and another $1 at 60.
So you're taking $7 out of the pot.
Right.
Wow. Well, what games do you spread? Is there like a really high-stakes game, or what are you generally spreading?
We're spreading a lot of 2-8 limits at spread limit games, 3-6. And weekends we have what is called the Arizona Unlimited. We have a max of what the players can bet according to our compact. So we have a 5-to-175 game, which is a 1-2 blind, and you can go up to 175 at any time. It's not a structured bet.
Ah, that's because in Arizona you're not allowed to have true no limit. Is that right?
That is absolutely correct.
I see. So in other words, it's kind of like trying to be no limit within the rules of Arizona. You can't bet more than $175.
Well, again, that is the Yalpai Prescott Indian Tribes Compact. Every tribe has a different compact, but there is no such thing as we used to have when I was in Vegas, which is unlimited, no limit poker, high limit, no limit poker.
I see. So each tribe negotiates its own maximum.
Right, and it's based on the population of the tribe.
Okay, so just because some of our listeners are listening to you and you're talking about your poker room, and they're thinking, well, I wasn't ever thinking about going to Prescott, but what might draw them to Prescott? Is it a place that somebody might go for a vacation on a retreat? And if so, what would they do there other than play poker?
Absolutely. Prescott is a wonderful town. It is a great small town feeling, if that's what you want, and if it's a place you want to relax and just kind of chill for a couple of days. It's got great weather. You know, we all do. We're high up. We're a mile high. We don't get that much snow, and we don't get that much heat. So it's never an extreme situation.
I see. Do you ever get any big-name performers to come to Bucky's? Any headliners? Or do you not rely on big names down there?
Unfortunately, right now, we don't. We are kind of... Actually, we have two casinos which are right across the street. One is Bucky's and one is Yowpie. And Yowpie is pretty much solely devoted to slots.
So,
and Bucky's handles all the rest. It's everything under one roof with the resort and the poker room and our pits, of course.
Is it the same tribe that has both places? Because your poker chips, I seem to remember, didn't they have both names on the poker chip?
Yes, they do. The tribe owns both the facilities. The tribe also owns the Prescott Resort. However, they're two separately managed entities.
I see. So any plans going forward for the casino or the poker room itself that might interest our listeners that you can talk about?
We're hoping to add a big entertainment center so we can do something with the with bringing names in. As far as the poker room goes, we're constantly changing our promotions, and anyone who wants to see what we have for that month, our website, BuckysCasino.com, has a monthly calendar.
BuckysCasino.com.
You got it.
Okay, now, do players get any kind of comps for playing? They're paying $7 maximum for a rake. Do they get anything?
Yes, they get 50 cents an hour.
Okay. And that can be used? Can that be used?
Sorry?
Can that be used at either of the properties, or is that just...
Absolutely. Absolutely. It can be redeemed for just cash. And you can do what you'd like with it.
Oh, you can cash out all your points.
Yes.
Wow, that's
in poker, we do that, which is not a common practice.
I see. Does your poker game, for somebody, let's say, who's just driving through the night, is your poker game going 24/7, or frankly, are you closed down for a few hours a day, or how does that work?
During the weekend, we end up closing down about midnight just because of business, but otherwise, we are 24/7. And if we have a game, we'll run 24/7, or two games. That's not a problem.
During the week you close at midnight, or during the weekend you close at midnight?
During the week. During the weekends, we probably run till about 5 o'clock in the morning.
I see. And when do you start back up again, typically in the morning?
Depends on the day of the week, because we have a very loyal clientele of many Omaha players that have their days, and they start at 7 o'clock. I have a game going, and Hold'em probably kicks in about 9.
So you have a daily Omaha game?
No, we have a daily Omaha game? We're equipped to handle a daily Omaha game. However, the way it's worked out, these players have decided on 2 days that they just come and play Omaha.
I see. And they start at 7 a.m.?
Yep, they start at 7 a.m., and the game usually goes till about 3 in the afternoon.
Wow, that's very interesting. Do you have tournaments as well?
We have a tremendous amount of tournaments. We're just getting ready to do the Northern Arizona Championships, and that should be in June. That should be a big event, and then we have big money tournaments. We normally have $10,000 total prize money tournaments every 3 months, and we always run Omaha tournaments and Hold'em tournaments, and we have like Monday, Saturday tournaments every week, and just working on designing some new tournaments and new ideas, because everything's been worked out by the industry.
Great. Well, we've been talking to Akhil Patel. If people want to find out more about Bucky's, they should check out the website, BuckysCasino.com. Akhil, you've been a very good guest. If you have any other promotions that you want to come on and talk about, let us know. We'll put you back on. That was Akhil Patel. Thank you for joining us from Bucky's Casino.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. Listeners, stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Great moments in history.
In July 1937, Amelia Earhart was informed by her navigator, Fred Noonan, that they were off course over the Pacific Ocean.
You're lost!
You sit here telling me that I'm not in heaven yet.
Can I hold the
No.
Now? Can I hold the
up? No.
That is so not cool.
In June 2008, House of Cards began podcasting. Go to houseofcardsradio.com and click on the podcast button for all recent show downloads.
Hi, listeners. This is Ashley Adams. I just wanted to mention something, that if any of you have any poker questions that you would like to ask, we are always interested in your questions and comments about the show, about the guests, strategy questions that could be practical questions about where and how to find the game. Send your questions to info@houseofcardsradio.com. And you can also get our tweets on Twitter at www.twitter.com/HOC radio. We're very interested in them. And of course, if they're particularly interesting, we'll put them on the air and answer them here in our segment of mailbag. info@houseofcardsradio.com and www.twitter.com/HOC radio. info@houseofcardsradio.com and www.twitter.com/HOC radio.
Hey, you serious about poker? Then winning 7-card stud by Ashley Adams is a must-have for stud players of all levels. In winning 7-card stud, the World Series of Poker Veteran takes you through a series of lessons and strategies designed to make you a better player in all phases of your game. The techniques of betting, what cards to play, how to read the other players, the art of bluffing, you'll learn to master them all. Winning 7-card stud by professional poker player Ashley Adams. Available at Amazon.com.
Poker players, listen up. Your right to play poker continues to come under attack. But with over 1 million members, the Poker Players Alliance is dedicated to protecting your right to play this great American pastime. Even if you've never played a hand of online poker, the Poker Players Alliance is fighting for you. No matter where you choose to play, the PPA is working hard to defend you, your rights, and the game of poker. The PPA is making great strides, but we still need your help. We have sent a clear message to lawmakers and others committed to prohibiting your right to play poker. We are organized and we vote. Add your voice to our cause and join the Poker Players Alliance today. Visit www.joinppa.org and become part of the fight to save poker. It only takes a few minutes to make a difference. The Poker Players Alliance, fighting to protect your freedom to play the game we love.
You're listening to House of Cards on the House of Cards Radio Network. Check us out at houseofcardsradio.com. You're listening to the House of Cards.
Time we both quit. You don't like losing to me, and I don't like winning from you.
You're going to sit down. You're going to play poker.
Mind a suggestion, friend? Trouble with you is you don't enjoy the game for its own reward. Stimulation, relaxation, pleasant association, and the interesting conversation.
Shut your mouth.
Welcome back, listeners. This is Ashley. I love that tagline, shut your mouth. I'm here with
Lee Marvin has one of the greatest voices in creation.
I really dug him. I really liked him in, I think, one of his first major movies was The Wild One with Marlon Brando, where he plays the rival gang. Anyway,
that clip was from the Comancheros, I think.
Comancheros?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I love watching him. He was great. Listeners, we are here doing our mailbag segment. I'm joined by Dave Weishattle, one of my producers. And what do you want to talk about today?
Well, I heard Tommy and D'Angelo. Is it D'Angelo? D'Angelo.
Tommy Angelo. Author of A Rubber Band Story.
Well, let me tell you something. I'm an Italian guy from New Jersey, so everything's D'Angelo.
Okay.
It's Tommy of Angelo.
Tommy Angelo. Remember that name.
Okay. But he mentioned he was a coach. I didn't realize he was a coach. And I know you did some coaching, too. And can you take us through that process
of
coaching a player?
Yeah, because you know, I heard his rates and I'm feeling, oh my God, I'm way undercharging. I'd only need to do that once or twice a year, 10 grand for 3 days. And but, you know, if you are a high level professional poker player, if a guy can get you ready for a tournament and help you with your big picture and you can win a major tournament, it's worth $10,000. I don't do anything like that. I am a grinding poker player, and I've thought a lot and written a lot about the game. And my rates are way less. I'll charge $100 an hour, and I'll tell you what I do. $100 an hour, maybe a little more if I can get away with it, but $100 an hour. Or I have arrangements that I've made where people can hire me for $250 a month, which I've also done. And here's how I work it. I find that the best way of helping people, and I'm talking about generally intermediate players who want to get better at their game and they want to see what holes they have. And what I do is I ask them to pose questions to me on the internet. I said, we can do it on the phone, but it's probably better for your battery life if we do it on the internet. Pose questions to me about hand situations you were in. Like I was sitting in early position and I had Jack 10 suited, and it was $5, $10, and then me, and what should I have done? It's basic as that. Should I have called? Should I raise with 10 Jack suited? It's a pretty good hand. And then I'll get into a discussion with them. Well, you have to recognize your position. You're in early position. So in early position, you generally don't want to raise in that setting. A lot depends on your image, but we'll talk about image later. The standard play would be to call unless you know that there are very aggressive players to your left like that. So I would start them off. And then I encourage them to ask follow-up questions because typically beginning and intermediate players are trying to justify what they did. Mm-hmm. So they say, but wait a second. I thought you were supposed to build the pot with a good hand, and that's a good hand. And then we'll talk about position and relative strength and image and all that stuff. And I'll do that. I've done it for a few dozen people I've done coaching for. What I don't do, some people do, and we had some guests on the show who do this, is that they will go either with you to a casino and sit behind you and watch what you do and then give you comments after a couple of hours of watching you play, or have people watch them play, watch my hand and how I've played my hand. I've never done that. I would never do that. Or they do it online, where they have somebody watch them play online, which, of course, now with Black Friday is more difficult than ever, and they send them comments about how they played, and the guy is sharing his hand with him so he can see what he did. I have Jack 3 of diamonds. What do I do? Like that. So that's how that
works. Wouldn't you go to a casino? It seems like that would be a great place to observe someone in the actual setting where they're going to be playing the game.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to bother. I don't want to bother spending the time and the travel to go down there. And if I'm in a casino, I want to play. It's not like I live in the casino. It's right next to my house. I suppose I could get over that with enough money. I mean, if somebody were paying me $10,000 to take 3 days and stay at Foxwoods and watch them play and write comments and talk to them every couple hours about what I'm observing, yeah, maybe it would be worth it. But it's just so much easier to do stuff on the internet, so much less overhead, so much less commitment that I much prefer it, and I'm willing to sell my services for quite a bit less than Tommy Angelo.
Now, but do you start off with the big picture of the game, or do you have to one aspect of the game? Because I know players, myself included, I get focused on one thing that in my head I think I'm terrible at, and I just focus on it, and I keep betting pre-flop. I mean, that's just, I'm reading charts, I'm looking at this, and I still can't get over that hurdle. So this is how embarrassing it is. I carry around this little pre-flop chart.
Let me see.
We were going to be talking about coaching.
Cool. Let me see.
There you go.
So there this is made for radio listeners.
Yeah, boy.
I'll describe it to you. It's about a 4x2 inch, literally torn out of a book, piece of paper.
No, actually, I made a copy of it.
Oh, okay.
So I can put it in my wallet.
And it has a couple of words at the top, pre-flop strategy in bold, and then in very small type, reverse serigraphy. So the letters are white on a black background. It has one column labeled with letters A, B, C, D, and E, kind of like grades, mm-hmm. I guess. And in the A, next to the A column, they have AA, which I imagine aces, kings, and ace, king suited. And next to the B column, and then it has, you know, the C column, which is ace, queen suited, down to ace, jack suited, including nines and ace, queen unsuited, and then, you know, the sevens, and then any low pair and other premium hands. And then it says how to play them. And it says if you're in early position, open, meaning I imagine raise, with hands in the A, B, or C category, and then middle position, what do you do? And then in the blinds, it has something down below. It's a little confusing.
this is really thrilling radio,
by the way.
What
it does is it looks like it takes a poker strategy book like Lou Krieger or Lee Jones or something, and it gives you a condensation of it mm-hmm. in a graphic way, kind of like the blackjack charts.
It's Howard Lederer's.
Okay. Yeah. What I would do,
but like players like that, I get like focused on one small yes. aspect of the game, and I have trouble leaving it.
You know, okay, what I would do is, it's interesting. Being a poker coach is not too different from being a good union organizer, believe it or not. And as an organizer, when I'm trying to build the union in a school, or back when I did nursing homes in a nursing home, the one cardinal rule is you must start where people are. You must start if their big issue is they're being sexually harassed by their boss. That's the issue you address. You explain how addressing that issue relates to how you're going to build a union. If they are concerned about the fact that it's a horrible work environment, it's not safe, start with safety. If it's money, money. If it's health insurance, health insurance. If a guy is obsessed with starting hand values and how to play them pre-flop, that's where you start. I would ask you, I'd say, well, give me a troubled hand. Give me a hand that you had and you didn't know what to do. And let's think it through. And out of that, you would come up with a better understanding of how to play pre-flop. And then we'd go, okay, now that we're done with pre-flop, after a while, you'd feel more confident, and your questions would be related to something else. If not, then I'd stay on that until you were felt thoroughly exhausted. And if you didn't want to move on, we wouldn't. But typically, players then have other questions. They feel like, I've spent enough time on that. Mm-hmm. So that's why I let the player lead me. Now, saying that, I have a book I've written, which I supply to people sometimes as a preface to playing to being a coach. So read this book, ask me questions.
So as a coach, what have you seen as the most common problem that poker players have?
A lack of clarity about how to play their hands in based on position. I'd say an understanding.
Well, I guess that's part of my problem, too. I guess that's part of my issue.
Yeah. So. And then, it's very varied. I mean, people are all over the map about what's important after that. I think understanding psychology is important. People don't understand the concepts that intermediate players don't get is the image that they have in the eyes of other players. That's a very big issue.
Well, you mentioned that. That's one of the things that goes through my mind. You know, I want to play quality hands, but you know what? I want to fold bad hands, but the other guys are going to know I have quality hands if I'm not folding, so maybe I should play bad hands once in a while just to get them off their game. So it's
as advertising.
Yeah.
It's all over the map. I think the first thing is understanding position. The second thing would be understanding some of the psychological principles of play, how to exploit your image, and then it's all over the map. Mm. So that would be it. And I tell you, if anybody...
And by the way, I did not know we'd be talking about coaching. So that's how pathetic I am. I have a pre-flop chart in my wallet. That's how bad I am.
That's not bad. That's good. I mean, do you actually use it, though, in a game?
Well, you know, you can't whip it out in a
why not?
Game. Well, at the casino? What?
Why not?
Really?
Absolutely. Sure. And all the other players will snicker, and you could use it and say, I'm brand new, and you could psych them. You know, you could set them up when they think you're a complete rank amateur, and then you can make a move. I had somebody, in fact, who won a tournament. It was a long time ago. It was a stud tournament. She had never played before. She had the hand rankings. And by the end of the tournament, I found out that she did something as a bluff. She pulled out her chart to see, apparently, where her hand ranked, because she had a couple of flush cards showing, and she was looking at her chart. Now, if she had nothing, she doesn't have to check a chart, right? But she's checking her chart and looking and studying it, and then raised. And everybody folded, thinking she must have a good hand. And she didn't.
Brilliant. That's
right. She had
brilliant.
Nothing. So, anything else? I think we got about 30 seconds. No, I'm getting the cut sign. That's
cut
it.
Sign.
Welcome to House of Cards, listeners. We'll be back in a week. Please come back, and until then, good luck.
Across the desert plain, you build a house of cards.